Welcome to the Science Podcast. It's February 15th, 2013. I'm Sarah Crespi, and this is a special podcast from the AAAS annual meeting in Boston. Evolution works with what it has on hand. In human evolution, the back went from a horizontal connection between front and hind limbs to a main structural support for the upper half of the body. The consequences are not pretty. Science writer Ann Gibbons interviewed two presenters here at AAAS, Bruce Latimer and Jeremy De Silva, about the scars of human evolution.
Hi, I'm Ann Gibbons. I'm a writer for Science, and I'm here today with Bruce Latimer, a paleoanthropologist and anatomist at Case Western University, who's a specialist in the back and the foot. And I'm also here with Jeremy De Silva, who's an anthropologist who's a specialist in locomotion and the foot. And we're here today because we're talking about the scars of human evolution. Humans are one of the most successful animals on the planet, maybe the most successful primate. We have evolved all sorts of interesting adaptations, such as upright walking, large complex brains. We live long lives. We have complex social histories and life histories. But all these adaptations that make us so successful come at a price. And that's what these two anthropologists are here to talk about today. They're part of a session where they talk about the adaptations that have made us successful, but what has the cost of those adaptations been to our anatomy? So we're going to start first with Jeremy, who's going to start from the ground up, talking about what happened to our feet as we evolved from being apes on the ground to upright walking humans.
I think a useful way to go about this is to ask the question of what would you do if you were going to design a foot from scratch? And you wouldn't make what needs to be a rigid structure to push off the ground and propel you into your next step. You wouldn't make it out of 26 individual moving parts that then need to be bound together with ligaments and the action of muscles. So why do we have a foot like this? And we need to look no further than our living relatives, our closest living relatives, the apes. Other primates also have these bones in their feet. They're just more mobile and grasping for the life that they live in the trees. And that's what we've inherited. So natural selection can only work with pre-existing structure, and the pre-existing structure we have are these 26 once very mobile bones that now cause us some problems.
So what happens when you take those 26 really mobile bones that are great for grasping limbs and moving through the trees, and you put them on the ground and try to walk and run on them?
Natural selection, of course, the great tinkerer, has made some really subtle anatomical but functionally very important modifications to these little bones. And so many of us who study the feet look for these, you know, small little alterations compared to humans and chimpanzees to tell us that something, say, in the fossil record, walked on two legs. So the differences are actually quite subtle to maybe somebody who's not familiar with the anatomy. But to us, they mean a great deal, and they're functionally quite important. And so these modifications to what was previously a more mobile foot skeleton have rendered the foot a little stiffer and can push off the ground in this bipedal manner.
Is there a cost to this? Do we have problems as a result of making a stiffer foot that lets us push off the ground and walk? What are the problems that we face now in our feet?
Well, the problems we have in our feet are not just a result of, you know, what's going on in the foot, but what's going on in the ankle, what's going on in the knee, what's going on in the lower back, as we'll hear from Bruce in a moment. So all of these things end up forming this sort of chain reaction of potential problems. Now, natural selection's a pretty fearsome force and has done well enough to allow us to be here. Our ancestors obviously survived, and so these anatomies were good enough to allow them to survive. There, of course, cost to this. Things like ankle sprains. We suffer from plantar fasciitis. We suffer from osteoarthritis of our foot. Bunions. Now, many of these are induced by shoe wearing and walking on sidewalks and the things we do today. But we know from the fossil record that many of these same problems existed millions of years ago.
How early do you see foot problems in the fossil record? Was this happening as soon as we started walking upright, or is this a modern problem?
I think it started right away. There's a wonderful skeleton from Ethiopia known as Kadanumu. It's a big male Australopithecus, and he had a healed ankle fracture. We see a similar healed ankle fracture in an early hominid from Kenya about 1.5 million years later. There's osteoarthritis of a foot skeleton, a very famous foot skeleton from Olduvai Gorge, known as OH8, found by the Leakeys, and it has arthritis all through the foot. So we see these problems all the way back to the origins of bipedalism, most likely.
So, Bruce, tell us about the back. We got a lot of advantages from upright walking, but what happened to the back?
Well, the back may very well be the greatest problem area of all. as I mentioned it earlier, that in a review that was in Science, they showed that of the problems that humans suffer, the back is number 6 across the world. I mean, that's phenomenal. I mean, which tells you it is indeed a weak link. And why is it a weak link? Well, what we've done is we've taken a spine that was essentially horizontal to the ground in our pre-bipedal ancestors, and we stood it upright, which means you've taken the gravity vector and you've realigned it by 90 degrees. Now, we're the only animal that's done that, and associated with that are things like prolapse of the uterus, prolapse of the rectum and the bladder, hernias, femoral and inguinal hernias. We have fallen arches like Jeremy was talking about, hallux valgus, shin splints, varicose veins. I could just go on and on. So all of these things are a consequence of changing that gravity vector. Now, one problem when you stand up is you have to be able to balance over your hips and your feet so you don't fall over on your face. And that's more difficult than you think. So what we had to do was to build into our lower back something called a lordosis, which is to say that hollow in your lower back. That allows you to take your torso and balance over your hips. Fine. Problem is, we had to do that because we couldn't occlude the birth canal, so we couldn't change our sacrum, so our sacrum is essentially still horizontal. Now, this means that as we walk, we twist our spines constantly. We've increased the amount of force we put on our spines because we hit on a single limb heel strike, just to say one foot at a time. And all of these things lead to breakdown in our spines. For instance, humans are the only animals that suffer from osteoporosis that we then impose on this curvature of our spine, and we end up breaking bones. We will spontaneously fracture bones in our spine, and the most common fracture is T8. That's because it's directly where it should be mechanically. So as we lose bone mass, we also then start to break these bones, and that's what ends up in what's called the Dowager's profile. If you look at your grandmother or an elderly woman, you'll see that they actually do lose height, and they change the profile of their body. Well, that's a consequence of this. We also herniate discs. Everyone herniates discs because we twist and twist and twist those discs every time we walk, and what happens eventually, the inside of the disc, what's called the nucleus pulposus, the liquid, the jelly portion of it, breaks through the annulus, what holds it in place. Think of it as a week-old jelly donut. And if you hit that jelly donut, you know that jelly's coming out somewhere. Well, that's exactly what happens in our discs when they start to age. So all of these things were designed to get us through our reproductive period. And they normally will get you through. But when I see a reproductive period, that's 45 years old, maybe 50. And after that natural selection, you've fallen off its radar screen. So as we our demographics age, what happens is we're going to get more and more and more of these uniquely human problems. But we'll have to learn to live with them. It's because natural selection isn't going to take care of it.
So you use the word designed, but what I hear you also saying is we inherited a body plan that was designed, not really designed, but that evolved for apes that were walking on all fours and moving in trees. We started with a body plan that was meant for something very different, and then evolution had to work with that, and we ended up with these feet and backs and pelvises that had to adjust to be tilting upright and to give birth to larger babies and bigger brains. And so today we're dealing with the consequences of that, and you've described what's happened to our backs and to our feet. We have all sorts of problems there. Can you talk a little bit about what other people in the session also discussed with childbirth, you know, some of the issues that come up there?
Sure. Childbirth is, if you imagine this, what you've done in order to walk bipedally is you've had to dramatically modify your pelvis. You've moved muscles from the back of your hip to the side of your hip, and they allow you to stand on one foot at a time, which incidentally, humans are the only mammals that can stand on one foot. Okay, so we've dramatically altered our pelvis. Then, to make matters worse, we have started to grow our brain. 2.5 million years ago, our brain begins to expand beyond the size of a chimpanzee. And what happens is as it grows, we have to secondarily modify our pelvis again in order to get this large brain fetus through the birth canal. And humans have a rather difficult time with birth. And that's a consequence of creating a pelvis that allows you to walk upright as a locomotor pelvis and then secondarily changing it to allow it to become an obstetric pelvis. Anyone that's ever seen a human birth knows it can be quite traumatic, and it still remains quite traumatic. So obstetrics is a major problem that humans have and continue to have.
So natural selection has allowed some of the scars of human evolution to persist, such as allowing us to survive with back problems and knee problems and ankle problems, because most of those things don't prevent us from having children that survive. But how is it that the large brain has been allowed to evolve, even though it kills so many mothers in childbirth and infants? You would think that that would be so costly, it would be selected out. Do you have any thoughts about that scar of human evolution?
You're right. I can think of no greater negative selective pressure than losing a term fetus and perhaps losing the mother too. So the question is ultimately, what positive selective advantage did big brains have that would overcome that? And I will just say that we can see the brain beginning to grow at about 2.5 million. And it grows from essentially a chimpanzee, slightly larger than a chimp, but not much, into what it is today, you know, topping out with modern Homo sapiens at, I'll call it 200,000. It's the fastest growth trajectory in evolution that I'm aware of. It's phenomenally fast, meaning, once again, that selective pressure, the positive pressure for big brains, had to be enormous to overcome the negative ones. What is it? Frankly, I don't know. I don't know what could result in this. I'll pass it off to Jeremy.
Well, I agree, Bruce, and I think one of the interesting things that we've learned about the fossil record is that the human brain has actually gotten smaller over the course of the last 30,000 years, and I don't think anyone would suggest that we've gotten any dumber for it. And so one of the, you know, interesting, I think, challenges we have is really understanding why the brain got as big as it did, given these potential consequences of birth. And one other thing I would add in is Karen Rosenberg and Wendy Trevithan have done wonderful work demonstrating that childbirth requires, as a result of these challenges, requires this event to be a social event. And maybe our social nature and humans as both biological and cultural animals allowed us to survive and continues to allow us to survive these challenges.
Well, thank you very much, Bruce and Jeremy. Very interesting.
Thanks very much, Anne.
Thanks, Anne.
That was Science's Anne Gibbons speaking with Bruce Latimer and Jeremy DeSilva on the painful story of human evolution. Thanks for listening to the Science Podcast. I'm Sarah Crespi. Check back on iTunes, the RSS feed, or the Science site for more podcasts from the meeting.